Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Are you interested in angels, demons, spirits, ghosts, and monsters? Are you curious about their origins, tales, and influence upon history and on the present day? If so, sit back, relax, and welcome to Southern Demonology, the podcast that explores all of this and more.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Southern Demonology. I'm JJ, and today we are going to be talking about Lilith, the topic I've promised for a few episodes now, but I want to take a little bit of a backdoor to get there, and I hope you'll excuse me for the diversion. Have you seen the original Twilight Zone? It's kind of a strange question. If you're coming from my generation, the answer is going to be inevitably yes. Just because it would show up on, you know, holidays that you'd watch it, on Halloween. If, you know, you're happen to watch in the Sci-Fi Channel, then it's usually reran several times a year. So it was pretty ubiquitous in terms of its audience. Not quite so much now, but I bring it up because the genius of the original Twilight Zone was that it wasn't really pegged into any one particular genre. Yes, the vast majority of the episodes were, you know, dedicated to horror, but you also had a lot of science fiction mixed in, post-apocalyptic themes. But one of the biggest ones, and I think this is the one that most people tend to forget about, is that there were quite a few episodes that were geared to humor. And it was that humor that really kind of stood out. It didn't allow itself to be one dimension. And that's why, and it's, you know, the series have been remade quite a few times, but none of them will ever approach the original. And it's not just because they're, you know, schlocky piece of media that's trying to capitalize on a well-known name, although I'm sure that has a good bit to do with it, but it's just because of the fact that all of these new ones, they have to go into it with one driving purpose. We're going to be horror. We're going to try to shock the audience. But it didn't take a little bit more of an intellectual cast of things. And why do I bring this up? Well, there was another series that came along later that, although it still defined itself within the pure kind of horror genre, and I was doing finger quotes when I was saying that, even though no one can see that. Sorry about that. It also remembered that humor goes extremely well with horror. And that was HBO's Tales from the Crypt. Now, it tried to, like, distinguish itself by not only its spokesperson, which was a nice little, you know, punerific host, the Crypt Keeper, but it also had the Crypt Keeper inject humor into everything. Now, unfortunately, the stories themselves were extremely lackluster And the only kind of like selling point that it had was, well, we can bring some big stars to each one of our shows. Didn't really help it all that much. However, it did actually launch two movies as well. And I don't know if you've seen them. I hope you have. The first one was actually really good. Demon Knight. It told a story of cosmological import, and it was pretty well done. The second one, not so much. But it's the second one in which we're actually going to be coming to our topic for the evening. Bordello of Blood, if you've seen it, then you were introduced to Lilith, the main baddie in the movie, who was kind of a demon slash vampire slash something or other. And if you're wondering why there's that ambiguity to it, I think that that's pretty much the only thing that movie got right. You see, Lilith has gone through a ton of transformations, and she's been around for oh so long, ever since Mesopotamia and actually Sumeria as well. So she stretches back in history for a great deal. Now, most people that happen to know her knows that she is somehow Adam's first wife, or maybe she's the mother of demons or something along those lines. And in fact, just a few weeks ago, Blizzard announced the newest Diablo, Diablo 4, and in it, the main great primeval, that's how they classify their demons in that, is actually going to be Lilith, which is what made me think, well, hey, maybe this would be an interesting show to be able to bring up. But Lilith, beyond just the video game aspect, has fascinated me for quite a while, because it's this fluidity of her nature. You see her start off as a goddess who then becomes a night hag, who then eventually becomes the mother of all demons. So, how did this happen? What's some of the history behind this mysterious figure? That's what we want to explore tonight. So, hope you sit back and enjoy. It's going to be kind of a long ride, but I will make it as entertaining as possible, or at least as much as I'm able to, which isn't that much, but, you know, we'll see how we get going. So, surprisingly enough, the mystery of Lilith starts at the beginning, in Genesis, in Bereshith. If you look at Genesis 1, starting at verse 26, and I'm reading from the JPS version, it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and said unto them, be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that creepeth upon the earth." Did you notice anything strange about that passage? If you said, that doesn't quite jive with what I thought about how God created man and woman, you would be absolutely right. If you look in Genesis, there's actually two creation myths regarding humanity. There's this first one in Genesis 1, and then follows is the more complete version that most people are, you know, very familiar with, where, you know, God creates man and then creates woman from a rib from man. Now, this has caused, again, a lot of confusion. How can you have two stories, one in which man and woman are created at the same time, and the other in which man's created first and then woman is created after? Some people have explained this by saying, well, the first is just an allusion to the second, or the first is more an abbreviated telling of the second. But some people really didn't buy that. So you have this idea that, well, in English we call him Adam, but that there's Adam and a female that was created. And then the second one, it's, you know, you still have Adam, but then you have Eve, who is created as a second woman. And if you look at later rabbinic material, this is kind of the concept that's gone with, where it was actually Adam and Lilith who was created first. And then they quarreled. She would not be subdued by Adam. And then she took off and later became the consort of demons and then evolved into the mother of all demons. So that's where Lilith wound up at. But to see where she really started within the lore of humanity, you have to go a good bit further back. Some believe that Lilith started in the Epic of Gilgamesh, where there was a demon called Ki-Sikil-Lila, which made its lair in the tree that the goddess Inanna, or commonly known as Ishtar, wanted to cut down to make herself a throne and a bed. And others think that that root term Lil, which means wind literally, but also can stand for the Hebrew word ruach, which can also mean breath or life, was one associated with three goddesses, or demons, as they later became known, of the winds.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So, she has kind of a complex history in Sumerian and Mesopotamian texts, which in the delineation isn't really all quite there, but there are two interesting aspects. So you have, you know, so the three goddesses were like Lilu, Lilitu, and Wardat or Ardat, Lili. And they all kind of became mixed together. But although they all meant wind, some of them also, especially the Ardat Lili, was really the name of a young, marriageable woman. However, the interesting part is that the marriageable part in this part is kind of questionable because of the fact that this is viewed as a type of seductress that you don't have normal intercourse with. So, and in fact, one of the legends or theories, whatever you may want to call it, depict Ardat Lili as being able to flee a house like an ill wind. And then you actually see in later Talmudic texts of people admonishing young men not to sleep alone, lest Lilith come into your house and seduce you. So, from the earliest days, Lilith has been very much associated with these ideas of wind, of breath, of spirit, and then also sexuality. Lilith has only really one mention in the Hebrew Bible, and that is in Isaiah 34. And that's where this passage is going over Edom and the desolation that it entails. So, reading from the Revised Standard Version, because the translation in this case is a little bit better, Isaiah 34:14, "And wild beasts shall meet with hyenas, the satyr shall cry to his fellow, yea, there shall be the night hag alight, and find for herself a resting place. There shall the owl nest and lay and hatch, and gather her young in her shadow. Yea, there shall be kites be gathered, each one with her mate." And that ran also into verse 15. But that part where it said night hag, that is actually Lilith. And this is kind of a folk etymology, but Lilith sounds pretty close to the Hebrew word for night, or Layla. So, the kind of popular etymology is that she is a night hag, or a night demon. So, as we all know, Israel did not exist by itself. Judaism did not exist by itself. It sat in a wide net of concepts and beliefs and mythologies, and it borrowed from them, and it was heavily influenced by those different aspects. And so Lilith appears here as a night hag, as a creature that is associated not only with hyenas and jackals and goats, but also with owls and kites and raptors, etc. So you can see there's still this concept of wind, of, you know, all, with all of these horrible night creatures that dwell within the desert. But she's something slightly different. She is a definite evil force all unto herself. And the interesting part is being able to track back, when did this transition happen? You know, you had her start off in Sumerian and Akkadian texts. She then mysteriously shows up in Isaiah as a demon that resides in the desert. And then you have her further evolutions that go forth within later Talmudic and rabbinic texts that show that, you know, because she argued with Adam, she flew away from the garden and then started cavorting with demons and giving birth to them. And that's why she became known as the mother of demons. The interesting part is that, you know, even in the Dead Sea Scrolls, we have 5Q, 5, 10, and 11 that I read last time. I'm not going to read the whole thing again, I promise. But she's mentioned there again. You know, not only do you have the spirits of the angels of destruction, the spirits of the bastards, demons, Lilith, howlers, blah, blah, blah. She is still a very definite force. And I think one of the staying powers that she has is not only this entire entanglement with sexuality, but moreover, it's really the concept of wind, that she is, like the giants, another one of these demons that is comprised of ruach, of life, of breath, of spirit. And that's what makes her so entirely dangerous. She is at once, you know, tangible and intangible, with, you know, the biblical references of her appearing alongside satyrs and also owls and kites. She's both familiar and unfamiliar. She is one of these things that lurks in the darkness. In fact, it gets really kind of interesting because if you look in some of the Psalms where it starts mentioning demons by allusion, you get this concept of an arrow that flieth by day. And that is often associated with Lilith. And in fact, Lilith has been introduced in several other areas. She's often confused with Lamashtu, which is another demoness that, you know, sometimes is portrayed with the head of a lion and the teeth of a donkey, or later she's depicted as holding snakes and riding a donkey. And then later, even within like early translations of the Greek and Latin versions of the Bible, you will see weird translations of Lilith becoming Lamia. You find that in the Vulgate, you find it in a few others. So Lilith is all over the place, and it's probably because, you know, her influence spread outside of Mesopotamia into Phoenicia, and later into, you even find her in Zoroastrianism, where she becomes one of the daughters of Ahriman, which is like the head evil demon. So it just all goes to show that, you know, Lilith has staying power. She was really evident in folklore and mythology until the Middle Ages, and it's kind of tampered down, but now, you know, people are reaching back in antiquity. They're trying to find new sources of material to imagine. And her name is one of those that gets pulled up from the rift. And rightfully so. She is a fascinating character. I wish we had more source text so that we can actually depict what she was, you know, what her idea was at any particular period in time. If I ever had a chance, I would do so. But you even find her mentioned in magical amulets that supposedly Solomon had crafted. And that's going to be a topic for a future episode, going over Solomon, because Solomon and his wisdom spans multiple different books from the Pseudepigrapha and onward. And as always, Solomon was, you know, a tamer of demons. So, but regardless, this is going to kind of wrap up Lilith, and it will wrap up the, you know, kind of the three-part series in which we've went over what the angels were that were alluded to in Genesis 6:1. Then we went into the giants, and then we finally finished up with Lilith and the period of, you know, the tying thread between each one of those three is definitely this idea of spirit that is able to lash out at humanity, no matter if it is, you know, been sent against each other in battle or confined in the desert of Duda El whatever it may be, it still has lasting power, and at this point has lasted for more than 3,000 years. So I would say that it is, it definitely has very long arms that has been able to reach us even here in the present day. So we've been going over some pretty heavy hitting topics these past few episodes. So we're going to back it up a little bit and have a little bit more fun, I think. I'm going to go over some horror movies that I have been watching. And they're not just going to be from, you know, this year or last year. Or I'm definitely not going to make a best of or worst of the decade. Because A, no one cares to hear my opinion. And B, it would be very torturous to do so. But rather, I'm going to go over some of the best and worst. And go, you know, and try to highlight the ones that, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend. Or if you have, then hopefully we can commiserate together. So, look forward to that. Join us. Again, can't tell you how happy I am that you're with us. And I hope that we can keep this party going for a good bit longer. So, until next time, take care.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.